This is the 6th of September, 2026, and I hope that you are all doing well. It is still pretty hot here. We were going to get some rain, we were told, this week, and I think we got about a teaspoon the other night. But overall, it's still pretty hot. Eventually, it will cool down. It's always been hot in North Texas at this time of the year, and it's just the kind of it's the time of the year when you're ready for it to cool down just a little bit, and it's usually the rain that brings that cooling. We've been told for decades now, many years, since the 90s, that we are entering into a time of extreme heating up of the climate. And it's measured in how many degrees this year, and these are the worst disasters that we've had, and it's because of man-made climate change, anthropogenic global warming. And when you study the cycles that this very ancient Earth has experienced, periods of global cooling, periods of heat, we're entering into a different phase, but many people think it has nothing to do with warming, that we are going into another mini ice age. And there's very compelling documentation to show that. So I have not believed that human activity is contributing to a dangerous heating up of the Earth's atmosphere. No such thing as man-made global warming. But I've been rethinking my position on that quite a bit. And I have come to the conclusion that indeed, man-made global warming, anthropogenic climate change is real. Because it is human beings who spray us like bugs every day. It is human activity that sprays X's over the skies day in and day out, all day long. Here, when I look up, it's just a mushy mess, or I can see distinct X's all over the skies. So yeah, that is man-made climate change, man-made geoengineering. So I'm a believer. I just received a message from someone in Canada with a photograph, and they were so excited. They said, some natural clouds, finally. And I wrote back and I said, I had that a few days ago here, and it was so exciting. I did. I looked up at the sky on my early morning walk, and I could believe it. They were real clouds. And the person who was writing back and forth with me said, it's hard to believe how rare it's become. So everything is still, despite the building of data centers going up, you know, like a gas station at your local corner used to be back in the 60s, we are still being told that our activity has given rise to a rise in the average global temperatures, primarily attributed to human activity. It's just ridiculous. So the UN regularly gives us these predictions of the food shortages. United Nations says, despite our progress in reducing global hunger, the severe food crises persist, and you know it's mostly because of climate change. So it's a stereophonic repeating of the bad news that nothing we can do. We're trying. This is from August 18 of this year. J.P. Morgan warns a global food crisis could hit next year. And unlike oil, there's no backup plan for fertilizer. Well, that's another contributor to maybe not anthropogenic climate change, but anthropogenic food insecurity. Are these forever wars? So your so-called elected leaders never do what they say they're going to do. And Alan would, you know, muse over and over, but you still vote. You still want to put them in. This is a kind of an article here that it's from Substack, from someone named Donald Jeffries. And I glance at his work from time to time, and there is a lot of truth in it. There are some things that might be considered inflammatory, but I'm going to post this and you can read it. Because more and more people are saying, oh, we got conned. This man who said he was for the people, this man who said he was a populist, this man who said he was going to make America great again, is doing no such thing. America Last, H1B, DEI, and Wealth Disparity, Building Our Banana Republic. When you look at present-day America 2.0, you almost have to marvel at the depth of the unfairness, injustice, and criminality all around us. As I've said so many times, there is nothing accidental about it. None of the randomness our secular religion of, quote, science deifies. It was planned that way, to quote the hopelessly evil FDR. 60 years ago, every job in America paid a living wage. Whatever little homelessness existed, it was well hidden. There certainly weren't tents on the streets of major cities. There certainly wasn't human excrement on the streets of major cities. We were a very clear patriarchy. Only two genders. Very few 30-year-old adult children, let alone 40-year-old adult children, still lived with their parents. Rent was affordable. Home ownership was possible. My blue-collar, physical labor job included two raises every year. We had a traditional pension. If my company had kept that plan instead of scrapping it in the 1980s like all the other companies were doing, I would have had $2 million or more in retirement funds without including Social Security. My health insurance paid 100% of medical costs as long as you used one of their facilities, and it was all free, nothing deducted from my paycheck. This was common then, so how did they do that? We're told we couldn't possibly, quote, afford that now. We all know, or should know, about the disastrous and diabolical Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965. Now, I am not going to read all of this posting here. It's very long. But what he's going to get into is that until 1965, there were strict requirements on who could come in to the United States. And he goes on to mention something called the Great Replacement. If you look up the Great Replacement, you're going to be told that you are a conspiracy theorist and a hater. Then he goes on to say the Immigration Act of 1990 established the modern H-1B visa program. And he talks about that a bit. And he references a book that he wrote called Survival of the Richest. I'm skipping a little bit because, as I say, it's very long. One of Donald Trump's many 2016 campaign promises was a vow to end the H-1B visa worker program. Instead, H-1B visas actually increased during Trump's first term by some 4.5%. By January 2025, Trump and Stein would proclaim, "I didn't change my mind. I've always felt we have to have the most competent people in our country. And we need competent people. We need smart people coming into our country. We need a lot of people coming in. We're going to have jobs like we've never had before." Why do we need people coming into our people, and competent people and smart people? Because, well, could it be that we have the psyop that white women don't want their babies anymore? They're going to wear hot pink and tell you all about it. I was just looking this up, all of the hot pink that showed up at the Clancy murder trial. Lindsay Clancy's attorney addresses juries wearing hot pink after, quote, the hidden meaning speculation. Well, the color has been representing abortion rights for many years now. But it was funny. I got reprimanded by my browser when I was looking into this. Because it, you know, your browser, your search engine now talks to you whether you're engaged with it or not. So it told me when I typed in as a search parameter, hot pink for abortion ruling in Massachusetts. It said, I cannot generate content that promotes violence, harm, or attacks on individuals or groups. I can, however, provide information about the history of abortion rights protests, the significance of the color pink in these movements, or the current legal landscape regarding abortion, if you're interested in those topics. Would you like to explore one of those subjects? Okay. There is a bias that is built in to your large language models. No, it is not an unbiased tool at all. For I did not want to get into that story. When I first looked at it, it was a big yuck. Everything about it was a yuck. And I wouldn't say that there wasn't a clear right or wrong, or that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, when I looked at it, it's like it's almost designed to be polarizing. Lindsay Clancy murder trial ends in mistrial after days of deliberation. The jury, composed of 9 women and 3 men, told the judge by note Friday, "It is with a heavy heart we are still unable to come to a decision and will not be able to." So they declared a mistrial. Now, Polymarket is an American cryptocurrency-based prediction market, which offers a platform where individuals can place bets on future outcomes, including sports matches, economic indicators, weather patterns, awards, political and legislative outcomes, and military conflicts. I've mentioned it before that people are betting on the war. Now, this is Polymarket's site itself. I'm not logged in. It's not going to allow me to see very much at all. There's a lot of sports betting here, but besides the major sports betting, table down to table tennis, etc., etc., you can bet on politics. Who's going to be the presidential winner? And I mean, they haven't even picked candidates, but you can still bet on it right now. Is it going to be Thomas Massey or J.D. Vance? Who are the presidential nominees for the Democrats? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Dwayne The Rock Johnson? You can bet on the outcome of Lindsey Clancy's next trial. Will that happen before December of this year or before December of 2027? Will she be acquitted? Will she be convicted? Is Netanyahu going to be arrested by December 31, 2026? Now, Trump has clearly said that this is not betting, that it's a futures market just like the stock market. And Trump has made it much easier by overturning what states want to do about gambling in their own state. He's overridden it on the federal level. This is from February of this year. The rising cost of online betting addiction among young people. In an era when you can bet on almost any sporting event on your phone, it is no surprise that gambling addiction is on the rise. Young men are particularly likely to get in too deep. Online sports betting has become a multi-million dollar industry, making it possible for anyone, anywhere to bet on games. But that's given rise to addiction issues, especially among young people. And I will post that article for you. Here is another one. They're interviewing one person here who said that he had tried to set limits. And, you know, somebody says, oh, hey, placing a bet is fine, but everybody should do so within a limit that they set for themselves. That's like the alcoholic limit. I'm just going to have one beer, right? So Adam, a 33-year-old, so they're always 33, but maybe he really exists, tried setting limits. Adam said, "I had sort of convinced myself that I could do it responsibly, so that meant a $10 bet here or there." But over time, what happens with this addiction or any others is that it's sort of not enough. And he was lying to his girlfriend, keeping his girlfriend in the dark. I find myself saying, "I've got to go to the bathroom," multiple times whenever we'd be out. And then what I was doing was checking scores and putting in more bets. So one night in 2024, Adam decided to bet everything he could on a Boston Bruins hockey game. I walked into our bedroom where she was sleeping, and I woke her up and I said, "I have something to tell you." Boston had lost. I just gambled our entire savings away. I think that was the worst night of my life, of having to reveal all of that I'd been hiding for so long. But looking back on it, it was one of the biggest turning points of my life. Now, he ended up having a supportive girlfriend who became his wife, and he now goes to Gamblers Anonymous meetings. This is another one from USA Today. He had a debilitating sports betting addiction but didn't realize it. His story is not uncommon. June of last year. To Sam DeMello's friends, it seemed as if the then 26-year-old had everything together: a six-figure tech salary, an enviable workout regimen, and a happy relationship. But as he crossed the finish line of the 2013 Nike San Francisco Marathon, he was surrounded by a deep sense of self-loathing. His friends, family, and girlfriend had no idea he was struggling with a crippling sports betting addiction. He fell into it just a few weeks after being introduced to sports gambling, though he didn't realize it until a few years later. All of my friends would come to me and say, "Congratulations, man, you're crushing it. We're so proud of you." I would just feel this dissonance because I felt so fraudulent. DeMello, now 38 and in recovery, wishes he saw the warning signs sooner. As legalized sports betting grows across the United States, a growing number of young men are falling into gambling addictions without recognizing the signs. This is something I don't want to say that Alan Watt had boilerplate language when he or we answered emails, but there were certain things that he would say repeatedly if the situation arose, because I suppose he or he would dictate it to me, thought that this was a good thing for a person to consider, especially somebody newly discovering his talks, who would say, "Oh, this is great. I'm finding your talk so helpful." He would say and have me type something to the effect of, "It's good to be able to connect the dots and see the big picture." Because we're born into a system, you can call it the matrix. We're born into this system, and unless we have the miracle, which Alan would say is a miracle, to be able to start to see the system that you're born into. I don't want to call it waking up or detaching yourself as a battery from the system, because another thing that Alan would say is that this is a lifelong process. A lot of people say, "Oh, man, I woke up at 9/11," and then they started, running around and telling all their friends. And maybe some of you have been there, or they woke up during COVID and they browbeat their friends into horror stories about what was going to happen. And I understand that. I do. You want to warn people, this is a life and death situation. But another kind of boilerplate language that Alan would use with people in just that scenario, trying to show other people the system, he said, "You cannot do that. You cannot help people who haven't already started asking the right questions." By that, he meant, an example of a wrong question would be, "Why is my paycheck shrinking? Why did the president just do this?" Why are we at war? Those are interesting questions, but they're generally asked because it's affecting somebody in the pocketbook, or it's affecting somebody's ability to take care of their family or keep a job. They're not asking questions that allow them, or that would show you that they're seeing the big picture, that this doesn't just affect you, it affects everyone. So another thing that he would say very often to people who would write and ponder, now what do I do? Okay, I'm starting to know this, now what do I do? And Alan would encourage people to keep studying, keep learning, keep reading. Stay off the talking heads on the internet. Do the deep research with the dusty old books yourself, and the more the better. Try to allocate. If you've got time to watch an hour worth of television or spend 2 or 3 hours surfing online, going from, or doom scrolling, then you have time to read a book. Just pick one and read it, and then do another and another, and rewire your mind, because it's from that new rewiring, it's from the food that is decent that you feed your mind, that you can begin to access it and come to some of your own conclusions by yourself without having it fed to you by a talking head who is invariably going to end up steering you the wrong direction, not necessarily out of malice, but because they themselves don't know better. So the Trump administration has actively worked to expand and deregulate online prediction markets. It has asserted its federal jurisdiction. It has sued states that attempt to regulate or ban them as gambling. We got attacked, said Mark Carney. He claims that Canada is at war with the U.S. as Trump's 50% tariffs trigger trade showdown. And this is a couple of weeks old, but I am reminded of it once again because I received an email from someone in Switzerland who was trying to send me a letter and a small little item that she wanted me to see that she thought I would get a kick out of. It was a small envelope, and she went to the post office, and they had a discussion about how much it was going to cost. She filled out the appropriate form, and then a couple of days later, she was at the post office, and the little parcel that she was sending me was in her box. And she took it in and said, "What gives? What's going on here?" And they said, "Oh, well, because of Trump, you cannot send something that is addressed to a company name." So CTTM is not a name that she could send. So there is wide fallout from these tariff policies. So she resent it using my name, and you know, probably in addition to the CTTM or removing the CTTM, I don't know, and we will see if that gets through. So Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has declared Canada effectively at war with the United States over trade as President Donald Trump's new 50% tariffs on Canadian goods push relations between the two longtime allies to a new low. Carney, vowing retaliation, said Canada has the reserves, resilience, and plan to fight back against what he called an attempt to pressure Ottawa into a bad deal. "We were attacked. You're at war when you get attacked. We got attacked." So I've said before that this USMCA, the new NAFTA, no matter what posturing Trump does, that will not be overturned anytime soon. That stays into effect until 2036. So what that effectively means is that it's going to always be in effect because somebody else will come in and change it to suit the agenda. What does Trump do? He mocks you. He mocks the people who put him into office when they raise any concern or have anything to say that goes against what he is trying to push or what he wants to do. And he is heavily invested in the data centers and artificial intelligence. You remember this is one of the very first things that he did in 2025 was the Operation Stargate or Stargate for artificial intelligence. Huge project, and the data centers are popping up like mushrooms. Trump says U.S. communities opposing AI data centers could end up, quote, backwards and poor. He blasted communities that oppose new data centers as Republicans confront voter backlash over the projects ahead of November's midterm elections. Voting, 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 like it changes anything. The only reason that communities throughout the USA should not want data centers is if they want to end up being backwards and poor, Trump wrote in a Truth Social post. If they want to be successful and rich with far lower taxes and jobs all over the place, let data reign. The good news is that there are plenty of other places that want them. If we kill the golden goose, you will only have yourselves to blame. China could not be happier with this anti-data center movement. Actually, they can't believe it's happening. So he mocks the people who put him into office. He invokes the big bad dragon of China. We have to do this to keep up. All Trump has done since he got in is enrich himself and enrich his family and get us into war on behalf of another country. Now, what does that country have to say right now? This is from the Jerusalem Post. The war with Iran will not be won through airstrikes, so what's left? Congressional recognition of minority independence, debt relief for indebted young Americans, and a Beijing deal on Iranian oil are the three options that haven't been publicly discussed. The Pentagon reportedly asked outside analysts this month for creative ideas on Iran. I've got a creative idea. That request itself is worth paying attention to. Over 180 days into a war that produced the most intensive American air campaign since Iraq in 2003, the CIA has now confirmed what the strike data was already reflecting. First, Iran's military capacity did not collapse. Second, air power resolved neither the institutional problem nor the negotiating problem. Third, the Pentagon still lacks the tools needed to end the war with the Islamic Republic. What can they do? Well, guess what they can do? They can do debt relief. If a young man will go to war, here we go, economic enlistment for indebted military-age Americans. The narrative war on the domestic American front has already failed. The Pentagon has not been able to sell this war to the American public because the war has been rhetorically fused with Israel's operations in Gaza, and the American Republic rejects the fusion. Recruitment numbers are running below what a ground invasion of Iran would require. Estimates for a successful ground campaign against Iran's 31 provincial commands and its Mosaic defense doctrine run between 750,000 and 1.5 million American troops. The current active U.S. Army stands at roughly 452,000. The math does not work, obviously. Based on American history, however, there is a path forward, not conscription or a draft in a world war era sense, but enlistment through a debt forgiveness program. The average American aged 18 to 34 carries more than $40,000 in non-mortgage debt across student loans, credit card balances, auto loans, and personal loans, with some estimates going as high as $100,000. This is the cohort the Pentagon needs. A federally administered debt forgiveness enlistment program that fully discharges student loan, credit card, and loan balances after 24 or 36 months of service and extends the GI Bill would produce voluntary enlistment at scale. And the article continues. I will post that for you. I'll just read one more tiny paragraph here. The moral reading on this is uncomfortable, but states generate the soldiers they need through the incentives that work on the population they have. Okay, so maybe there's a moral dilemma there, but let's be pragmatic here. We've got to have the incentives that work. We live in perhaps the most disgusting, corrupt, just diabolically evil times that have ever existed. Corruption, greed, just the filthiest behavior has been normalized. That's what we're seeing here. And I would encourage you to keep focused on removing yourself as a battery from the system, not letting the system feed on your energy. One of the reasons I stayed off of that Lindsay Clancy story, horrific as it was, is we will have more of them. We're going to have many more of them. Here's an example. Frankfurt mother charged in murder of two-year-old son, said he was the Antichrist. Witnesses told police she was very invested in Lindsay Clancy trial. Defense attorney says she experienced psychotic episode Friday, September 4, 2026. 40-year-old Frankfort, Illinois woman has been charged with first-degree murder. Charged in the death of her son, Barrett Walsh, 2 years old, who prosecutors say was found Tuesday by a neighbor hanging from a rafter in the basement of the family's home. Authorities said the same neighbor allegedly found Corey Walsh upstairs in a bathtub after she injured herself with a knife. She told investigators that she committed the crime, the act, because her son was the devil and the Antichrist. The married mother of four was experiencing a psychotic episode. This is a tragedy for the Walsh family, all of whom are mourning the loss of this child. Look, every story is different. Some stories that we are given aren't going to be true. There's a lot of people who have really gotten into the numbers on this, and called it a psyop. Isn't it interesting that her children's names, Lindsay Clancy's children, were two C's and a D, Cora, Callan, Dawson. And there was a case in the UK with a woman, also a nurse, who killed her three children. And those were Connor, Dara, and Carla. So CDC, it adds up to CDC. That's Centers for Disease Control in the US, by the way. A lot of bending over backwards to total up things to 33, and we get, numerology coming into effect. I don't want to go there. I have some hot pink that I like to wear because it's a nice color, and I'm going to keep wearing it now and again when it strikes me. It's disgusting, though, to me that anyone should think that I'm in support of, quote, so-called reproductive rights. We've lived in an era where women killing has become celebrated. And so it's very hard in these stories to separate that out. I don't know. So I just prefer to stay at a remove from it. Getting back to the battery analogy. Here is another thing that Alan Watt would say sometimes to people who would write, what do you do with all the bad news? What do you do when you see the reality that you are really in? And there's not an easy answer, primarily because it's an answer that you must arrive at for yourself. But Alan would encourage people to read and to study and to learn as deeply as they possibly could. And he said, with the understanding of this system, you can find a sense of purpose. But that's for you to uncover. What is your purpose going to be? And then he would add this, from purpose can come meaning. And he was careful. I had a discussion with him once about that. In other words, it's not a recipe. Your life is not necessarily going to have meaning if you find purpose. You're not going to make meaning and sense of the system that you're born into necessarily, but it can open up the door for that. Sometimes the deeper kinds of things that we yearn for take a lot of living before you start to connect to that for yourself. And that's the main thing that I want to stress here. You must do it. You must unplug yourself. You must decide, I'm going to pass on that story today. I'm going to stop voting. You must decide where your attention is focused day by day, moment by moment. Because if you don't, someone or the system itself is feeding on you and using you like a battery. And when you are paying attention and seeing where your energy and your time goes, your focus and your attention, then you have a lot more ability to say, no, I'm going to unplug. I'm going to detach from that. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to put my focus over here. I appreciate those of you who support me. You can write me, you can send donations and make an order at P.O. Box 815 Keene, K-E-E-N-E, Texas 76059. And that is CTTM. At cuttingthroughthematrix.com, you will find a Stripe link for ordering and donating. You will see the video channels and Substack. You will see a Cash App Cash Tag if you live in the U.S. That is an easy way to send money for an order or a donation. So if you like what I'm doing and it has some kind of value for you, please do that. The redux that you're about to hear is from September the 6th, 2020. The Deceit of Elite, a war declared by elite for November, will begin in earnest in Red October. Such open treason, all should remember. Put them on trial when chaos is over. As it turns out, the chaos is ongoing. One last thing I want to mention, and that is that I'm looking forward to a documentary that is opening later this month. Elon Musk Unmasked, an Alex Gibney documentary. Insane, a person this chaotic has so much power. He's the richest man on earth. An explosive new film from Oscar-winning director suggests he may be among the most dangerous. Now, I will seek it out when it opens up later on and try to see that, or whenever it's released on television, whatever. But you all know that anyone who is given the money and the access to do something like this, we're never going to get the whole truth. We never do, never. And in a way, is this just more publicity, even, you know, the negative kind, which is still good. But for me, you know, in this whole promotion of the documentary, the one thing that struck me as true, and I think we can look at this, but if you can put the focus not on Musk, but on the people who, the machine and the system that created Musk for us to either love or hate, the filmmaker shows us here a dangerous huckster who stealthily aggregates power to exploit us, primarily by centralizing and controlling massive amounts of data. Gibney's basic take on Musk is that he's a confidence man, a confidence trickster. He's a confidence man whose power comes only from the stock market and disappears the minute we see through the facade of sales pitches, but can do a whole lot of damage until that happens. Musk is a product of a confidence trickster system. Trump is a con man. The people who put Trump in place are con men. The people who want your sons to have their debt forgiven by putting their lives on the line are con men. So unplug whenever you can and seek your own counsel through the wisdom that you build, that you grow within yourself by feeding yourself a better quality of intellectual and spiritual food. Take care.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 6th of September 2020. And again, of course, I always ask that you hold on to your sanity as we go through these times. Again, I was just thinking before I started yapping away there about the Matrix movie and how it gave you an idea of a system that coexists within another system. And it's all manufactured by outsiders, you would say, to serve their own purpose, where people really are raised to be batteries because you take energy from the people to run the whole system in the Matrix. And it's not too far from the truth in a certain way, an analogy, because everything comes from us, you know. You take all these multi-billionaire corporations, even trillionaire ones they have today, and they really do have multi-trillionaires at the very, very top. And all the money comes from us. You know, whatever is made by labor of all kinds and raw resources. So they take over raw resources of the world to make their products and so on. And including the food, I've mentioned this so many times before, their food supply is run by only a handful of international corporations, the bulk of your food supply. More so now than ever is they've made a big grab for it during the COVID front. You know, it's a front. That's what COVID is. It's an excuse under a wartime scenario to take over and change the whole system on behalf of those who already really rule it. And make it more efficient for them. And that's what it's all about. So really, as I say, we are still batteries in a way. We consume because we're alive, naturally. We have our basic needs have to be met at the very least. And even to your heating in the winter or cooling in the summer, if you live in a hot climate, all depends on energy. Again, technocracy that was founded on controlling and running and owning the energy supply of the planet. The humans need to survive by those who decide that they had the right to rule it all. It's more true than you think, as I say, with the Matrix. And in the Matrix too, in the movies, which are awfully entertaining too, you have all kinds of areas in the Matrix with different characters that are the major domos of their particular area. And you have the keymaster type thing, the locksmith, and all kinds of real good characters that are enjoyable in a sense for being the ultra bad guys. and they can go, they can lock you in or out of their particular areas. In fact, very much like the system in which we live, when you really realize that the world is a, it has many compartments, like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the World Economic Forum, that really is all part of the same structure, in fact. And they actually, they decide what the UN's going to be doing and what countries are going to be doing and what all the economies are going to be or not to be doing and how we're going to live. We don't, this, we call it a democracy, but a democracy's got nothing to do with it. If anything, it's a scientific oligarchy at the top, or near the top, at least serving the dominant minority, as Aldous Huxley mentioned in his own talks. And that's how it really is run. And it's been that way for an awful long time. For the people who really thought about democracy and really believed in it, I feel sorry at times. Because it's like giving you some... And it's a religion, really, isn't it? It's like communism is a religion. You have to really believe in it to make it work to any extent at all. Which generally means the populace has to give up all their rights and freedoms and even sacrifice and go into austerity for the greater good for something way down in the future, which we'll never see and never will see because it's not meant to actually appear ever. That's the trick of all working together for a better tomorrow. It's been done for an awful long time, of course, through the Soviet system and their bloc and in communist China. And communist China is interesting because, again, you have a different culture, a very ethnocentric culture, very proud of themselves too. They haven't had decades of being taught at university that they're bad and evil. And so they have no shame and no guilt for anything, you see. So they're very proud in their system. And they obey it very well. They are more of a collective society. I might put up tonight, actually, an article. I don't know how I came across it, but it was to do with the Silk Road. You've heard about the big Silk Road idea that, again, the World Trade Organization and the World Economic Forum have been pushing for years, a massive transportation system right from Russia all through, right through Europe and even having a spin-off part, a circular part in Spain. And they've designated Spain to be a multicultural society, a kind of hub for the future. And they've been working on that. And by the way, that's also part of the reason that China's been pushing into the borders of India, because they want to bring in the road through there. For those who are wondering why it's all about the skirmishes I've been having with China, that's part of it. And the media knows it, but the media are not there to inform you about anything. They're meant to get emotional reactions from you and to see if you'll swallow the lies they keep telling you, especially with the COVID that's going on right now. So, as I say, the Matrix is a system where you get your eyes opened with each room that you walk into, or go through the doors. Depends, you know, what kind of entrance you want for the audience. But it's quite interesting to see the different. It's not just levels on a horizontal plane, but it's also a vertical, and you can go up and up and up to whole new levels of it, and so on and so on and so on. But the idea is, it takes off really from the system in which we live, which is we are economic units, so we produce things. We're also energy in ourselves. And from it, you'll always have a dominant minority that suck from us and even force systems upon us, which we will often adapt and adopt very quickly, but adapt into very quickly as well. And look at the internet. Well, even with radio and television, these are like wonders to the world when they first came out in radio, let alone, you know. And I really mean this because, I mean, what I'm going to say, because it's true. It was a miracle in its day and age when radio came out. And I can remember my dad talking about the old crystal sets. And the crystal sets literally were because everything is oscillators to do with radio or even basic television as well. You had oscillating frequencies and you have a little oscillator inside your set or your radio or whatever. And if you can tune it to the same frequency as an incoming frequency, then it develops into audio, basically, through a bunch of circuitry. But anyway, in the old days, the people could get crystal sets, as he called it. Small units, and some of them were kind of portable, but you needed a long antenna to pick up the signal. And the antenna was really just, it's a roll of copper wire, very thin copper wire generally. And my dad mentioned it when he was young, and he was with some of his buddies in a little housing outway scheme. And one of them had a crystal set out the back garden. And and it was a big thing, you know, youngsters, especially boys too, are interested in all kinds of things, of technology and so on. So they got it going, and they put a little earphone on to listen to it, because it didn't have a built-in speaker. And they all had turns in it. And one of the little boys, these are boys about 8 or 9, you know, and one of the little boys looks, he said, where does it come from, this signal? And they said, oh, this is London, it's BBC London. And he looked and he saw the wire disappearing round the house, the side of the house. He says, man, that must be a really long wire. Because that's how children see things, you know. And technically, it was logical as well for a young child to think that way. It was, oh, that's an awful long wire. He didn't know that it didn't go right to the station. It just picked up the signals from the air. But that's what technology is, and people went crazy with radio. I think the first radio in the States, or station in the States, it played kind of country music at the time in the States, but it also was set up by real estate. Some guy who was into real estate who had the first advertising on radio, and that really took off, as we all know. And then along came television, and television was there a long time ago. In fact, pre-World War II, John Logie Baird in Scotland, for those who don't know, it had colour televisions, flat screen, big ones too, before the World War II broke out. It always gives you an idea that it was a fairly recent invention, but it's really much older, because he'd been making TVs for long before that. But technology, again, is power, isn't it? It's got the power to change society for those who want to change it, which gives them a power to change it. And the trick, again, is like the internet, is to get you to purchase everything yourself that they need for all information, because then they can control information. And most folk never figure out, they really don't, just like the television, they never know, they never really figure out the TV's not there really to entertain them. Entertainment is just, it's like the cheese in a mousetrap, you know, that's really what it is. The real purpose of it is very, very different. It's to standardize opinion and thought of society, no matter what society it is. And it's all arranged by experts and professionals to also change your behavior. That's one of the main things, is behavior change. And we have lots of information on that from many, many authors in the past, and people who investigated it all, and people who are involved in changing societies as well. And again, Aldous Huxley, who was definitely up there with the big think tanks in his day, and who belonged to a family that was part of the Darwin-type clan, and intermarried with them, in fact, eventually. Some of the members did, anyway. The Huxleys were well involved with those who were changing and directing the thoughts and behaviour of societies. He admitted that himself. He said, my family's part of the scientific elite who work for the dominant minority, and they work with academia as well. And it isn't just technology, it's also psychology and behaviorism, and how to alter the behavior and thoughts of whole populations of people. What you're living through today is tremendous, massive psychological warfare like we've never seen it before, really. We didn't even have this kind of psychological warfare during World War One or Two. Or even through the Vietnam era either. This is a big push for the planet. This is world war. This is real world war. And it's psychological warfare backed up with military type force through the police. The police are a force now. They're an internal force with a uniform, like any military. And they're generally armed in most countries. Not all, but most of them. And the ones who are not armed are often trained in the use of it, so they can arm them very quickly if they have to. So you're living through a world war, and this war is the culmination of many years, many, many years. You might even say centuries in a sense, to a very real sense. to bring in a technologically controlled society by the use of technocracy, specialists and experts in every possible area who are going to rule your lives. They're already doing it, but and they've got power to do it now, but they want the right to literally not just start off as a child with a child children like they have in Scotland with Girfec and parts of England too and other countries too with different names of advocating government agents and social workers to work with children from birth right through, no matter about ethical parents or not. It's to do with modifying the thoughts of the child as they grow up to suit the agenda of those who rule you and own your countries. That's what it's about. Always under a great guise. What's for the greater good again? It's and there'll be no animosity about from people or different ethnic groups or so. Well, just get rid of all that damage. That's what they claim, but it's a big lie because, as you well know, not every ethnic group has been subject to the same incredible indoctrination and standardization. Huh? Those at the top of the world, I've mentioned it before and some recent talks as well, but even many, many years ago when I talked about psychopathy, and some people wrote books about psychopathy and were good enough to mention me in their books is where they got a lot of the information from. But psychopathy is so interesting because when you really meet a real psychopath, you might not catch on quickly, you know. They like to often boast if they've been caught at something. Even in prison, some intelligent ones will often boast about what they did. They like the attention. However, if they're not caught they're working freely in society, most folk often can't quite figure them out. Women will often pick up fellas or get picked up by fellas or whatever, and they'll pick up fellas that they feel sorry for. Or they just need a bit of help. I'm the person to put them in the straight and narrow and fix them up. You know, that's maybe some maternalistic instinct, who knows? But the fact is, or maybe it's just plain ego, but it often ends in disaster if it's a psychopath they're picking up. Because psychopaths, on the low level, the low scale of things, the kind that just see something in a window and want it, they're not the brightest type on the low level, but they still have the incredible instincts of reading people and using them and manipulating. But they're also the kind that throw bricks into the window and grab the stuff and make off with it, and then they get caught and they're now a prison for their whole lives. But as you go up the ladder, and I think the studies that were done in the US and in Britain, maybe in the 30s and 40s, were catching on slowly because there was such a class distinction back then too. It was very overt, in fact. It's still there today, but it was very overt back then when they really thought most psychopaths were just working class types and unemployed types as well. Until they started to realize that, no, there's a lot more in the middle and upper strata. And that's when they went into, eventually, it took them a long time to get round to the CEOs of corporations and the big players in corporations that get up there and become the heads of even the military-industrial complex, you know. And then you find out that those who run the world financially, again, the dominant minority, you know, a hereditary group, will employ these psychopaths and put them in place as CEOs. These are intelligent type psychopaths. They're more savvy as to what's going on and they're careful not to end up afoul of the law if possible. But they're dedicated psychopaths. If you pay them well, they'll serve you well. And then they form clubs with them too and they can join certain clubs and very important type. They may even get knighted, some of them. A lot of them actually did in the past. If you look at the people who got knighted in Britain for the last maybe 150 years, most of them were merchant bankers and people like that who believe you me, in business, in real tough business, nice folk just don't get ahead. It doesn't happen that way. They'd be ruthless. And there are folk who are psychopaths who definitely are ruthless, who are very successful in the business world by being ruthless. and by again lending to governments. Like that's how often Britain knighted them and gave them in return for it. They'd end up being up there amongst the lords and ladies, and they'd intermarry each other, you see. So the psychopaths marrying into the psychopathic realm have a good chance, especially in the lifestyle and the culture within the family groups, of raising a good psychopath to take over. Intergenerational psychopathy, see. Very important. And all countries have it too. So when you realize the world's run by this kind of system, and then in the technological sphere, and those who are really into technology, who run the electronic systems of today and these massive empires of bits and bytes, etc., and Silicon Valley types, you'll find a lot of them are actually geeks. And their world is what they do, and why they're doing it. They're kind of far removed from the emotions, the normal emotions that folk, have you noticed that with them? It was often thought a lot of them were almost autistic, Asperger types. And some of them may very well be, that they don't seem to get on very well with people. And they have no qualms about working with the NSA and organizations like that, where they have no right to be in folks' lives in the first place, electronically destroying privacy and invading it further and further and further, and other ones as well that work to design the next part of the cultural change as you get turned into slaves. Obviously slaves, you have no free, you really don't have much free will left at all, you know. When choices in important areas are taken away from you, including using cash, for instance, this is an example. You're being the roads are being narrowed. All the accessory roads that join the main road are being stopped and walled off and are taken away or filled in, and you're left with this one road that you must be on. And the same with medicine and choices and everything else, or vaccinations or whatever it happens to be. When you don't have any choices, you're under a tyranny, a totalitarian tyranny, which will convince most folk that that's for your own good. And most folk, unfortunately, because the indoctrination is so perfect, they don't shout at people as they're persuading you. They're professional persuaders. That's what good psychopaths can do, by making things appear very plausible. You know? And most folk want to go along with it because they don't want to believe the world's rather nasty or it's cruel. Because as I've said before, regardless of the century we live in, basically we're all kind of tribal. We're all born in little tribes sometime in the past, maybe 1,000 and 2,000 or more years ago. It doesn't make any difference. And in a tribal situation, children, they want to feel secure inside the tribe. And it's expected the elders take care of them and warn them and protect them and so on. So, yeah, you might even leave home now at 15 or 16 if you want to. But the fact is, it's still in your nature to be protected by those who are more mature, the real role models. And so the real people have been displaced in today's technology with propaganda, rather perfect propaganda and perfect indoctrination through schooling, you know. So they're taught to be naive, stay naive, and the authorities, the experts, are in charge of it all, and just follow them, be obedient to them, because they're there to protect and help you. And that's the sort of mirage cover that they take upon themselves and project to you. You don't see them as they really are. You don't see the characters sitting at big board meetings talking about their multi-billion-dollar profits for giving you a flu shot for the year, for the nation or a few nations together. You don't see them meeting with members of parliaments or governments across the world, or the World Trade Organization, or again the World Economic Forum, or Gavi, or all these private institutions that they pretend are philanthropies. They've got massive shares in the big vaccine companies, you know, who also lobby governments, so the governments will take their vaccines that they'll manage to provide, and they all profit from it, of course. And that's just one example. If they could make you dress in the same uniform and a uniform that was made by one factory for the whole planet. And then they all looked the same, except for maybe degrees of superiority. You know, there's always some kind of superiority. And then they would do it, and they'd force you all to wear it. And they'd say it, well, because the material is meant to keep you safe from scratches and so on, from outside things and objects, then it's going to cost you about $5,000 each. So you'd be forced to pay it. They would do that if they could get away with it. Yes, they would. You better believe they would. Look at all the gadgetry they've come out with recently. Since the COVID idea. I saw something the other day, I think it was in China, where they had children sitting, again, with their mandatory, like 2 meters apart desks. And they had these plastic shrouds over. I don't know where the air came in from, but they had shrouds over them, you see, and utter farcical things like that. And one I saw was good a few months ago there. It was a guy who took it to the next level, and he got an air filter from a car's intake. And again, it's very good, actually. I mean, in reality, it'd be pretty good if you needed it, which you don't. It really is like a HEPA filter. It's so fine to keep all dirt particles out from the carburetor or the intake for the fuel. And he had it on his head, and he had a good chromed top on it. I don't know if he screwed it onto his head or not, but anyway, he had these tubes coming out of it, one to his mouth and a mask, and another one for an expulsion valve to let the air out. So I guess he could patent that. Maybe some corporation is already doing it. And we'd all walk around like that for the rest of our lives, eh? Because that's what it's come down to, utter farce that we've never seen before. And I knew this stuff was coming because I'd given talks back in the 90s on the incredible psychological studies that had already been done on us. And other authors, long before even Quigley came out in the 50s and 60s on television, talking about the studies on the public that were pretty well perfected. And they knew that using techniques back then, they could really drastically and very quickly alter human behavior and make us do things that perhaps we oughtn't to do or make us accept things that we shouldn't accept. That was way back then. But today, it's massive. I mean, your own tax money throws millions and billions across the world to these other think tanks and study groups and universities that all do these joint projects with those that eventually grab the patents, whatever they discover, and techniques. They have patents on techniques, by the way, for those who don't know it, on ways to manipulate you. And they do it, and it's very, very effective, incredibly effective, when you understand that most folk will take the path of least resistance at all times. Even though it's like one of those children's mazes you used to get with a little ball on it, and you go through the maze and you held it in your hand and you turn it left and right and up and down that to make the ball travel in the direction that you wanted it to go. But it was just like a little maze, and most folk will go along it and take the easiest route. Even though at the end, if you had a little hammer at the end, a little toy hammer would come along and just pop up through a spring and smash the ball, right? They would still go along that same path, left, right, left, right, left, right, until they get to the end, because it was easier to go that way. That's what people do. Even if you warn them, if they keep going the way they're going, they're done for. They'll still do it. I mentioned it before, there's a freezing of the mind comes into play when real danger starts to seep into your mind that you might be done for. And with some folk, it's paralytic. With a lot of folk, actually, it's paralytic. This cannot be happening in real life to me. We live in a civilized society, etc., etc., etc. And we know the Soviets killed millions of people. And the Bolsheviks, the slaughters was incredible. They still know that there's massive, massive fields in different parts of the Soviet Union. With layers and layers and layers of bodies that were mass executed. This was the people's army that did it, you know, the people's army. On behalf of the people, you know, as they always take over the same authority. It's for the good of the people. So on behalf of the people, we will execute you, because you are enemies of the state. You're enemies of the people. You're seeing it in marriage today with the COVID thing. You must wear those. You're enemies of the people. You know, you're dangerous to them. And that's a quick judgment and some baton and crashes in the skull. And that's it. That's where you are with this technique. And it doesn't really change too much on that level. But most folk will go quietly to the end without question. That's the sad part. I can't say enough about what happened with the Soviet system. And the Nazis used it again against people who, you know, they saw as enemies of Germany or the people. And that film of folk literally running in, you know, like one group after another, it's your turn now, and they'd run into this dug pit, and then they get shot, and down they went. The next group, and as folk watching it, they think when it comes our turn, it won't happen. That's what you think, you see. And the Soviets were masters. The Soviets actually sent out cards that were delivered to folks' homes by couriers when they came into a new territory. And were taken over, the Bolsheviks, you see. And the Bolsheviks were ferocious. They hated everybody, you know, except themselves. They sent out these little cards that were delivered, and when any Poland did the same thing too. And you get a little card, and it'll say, you attend so-and-so house, it might be the mayor's house or something that was taken over as a headquarters. And you walk in there, you'd be led. You wouldn't see many folk, it was like crowds of people, and you would just go along the corridor, for instance, and the guy would point there, he'd point in this room, and then you go down the steps into the basement. As you were going through the basement, they'd shoot in the back of the head, and that was it. Very efficient, and they had pulleys in the whole bit, would just drag the bodies up through the coal chutes, and then they would dump them into, there's even old film with this stuff, you know. Very efficient it was, but every person, they think, well, if they sent for me, they want to talk to me. That's the first thing, because you will not think the worst, you see. They want to talk to me. And away you go, and you never get anybody to talk to, because eventually you get shot in the back of the head as you've just passed another door. That's what happens. But the same thing with these big pits that they dug in Kachin, you know, there's another one too. Incredible horror story there as well. And another, like Bulgaria had it too, fantastic videos of survivors of some of these camps that had to work with the slaughtered bodies of their compatriots, and horrific things. This is what totalitarian society brings to you. What we're going into now, though, you see, is persuasive techniques. I mentioned before with that movie that was it Saving Private Ryan, where Tom Hanks, I think, goes, he's in a war movie, but he's looking for his brother or something, but I can't remember the whole thing. But anyway, there's a scene where they actually come across, the American troops come across some Germans. One of them started firing at him, they catch him alive, they decide not to execute him, and he gives him some, again, a good psychopath too, he gives him some spiel. And then they kind of let him go. But he, down the road, they meet him in a town. He'd gone to a town and met some other Germans, and they'd taken up positions to defend the place. And the Americans came in. And one of the Americans goes up a bell tower, I think it was. And at the very top of the bell tower, who's waiting there is the same German they'd let go before. He's a good talker, a good con man. And he's trying to press this blade, this knife into this American soldier. He's lying on top of the soldier. I pray. He said, just don't stop struggling. Don't struggle. He's not shouting at him. He's just speaking to him. Don't, it'll be all over very quickly and all the problems will be gone and it'll be quite peaceful. And, well, that's what you're getting right now, folks, with scientific persuasion. Same thing. Huh? Leave it to the experts. They know what's best for you. They got your best interests at heart, honestly. You know it, don't you? And they're well trained and they understand these things. They had articles, remember, in the paper recently, in newspapers, don't even question things, just leave everything, don't think too deeply, but leave it to the experts. This was the headline, you know. Well, here you are with all, and your governments are all on board with it, because are you surprised? Do you really think the politicians were ever real? Politicians are low-level psychopaths. They're quite happy to obey the masters and be given extra whatever it is, cash, residences, nicer residences and honours and stuff like that. They're very happy with that. Because our societies are incredibly corrupt, and they've been incredibly corrupt for an awful, awful long time. It's normal now. They're really, really badly corrupt too. So now, what you're living through now is a managed horror show, disguised with hygienic white face masks on people with white coats. You see in hospitals and things like that. That's managed that way. The common enemy, again, the enemy, the people, is a COVID, you know, like a coisa. Coisa is a COVID type as well. It's a cold, common cold. But this one's a SARS type, right? And most folk literally are already immune and don't even know they've had it, you see? And that's the way these things generally work. Never mind all the lying, I'll touch on it later, the lying statistics, etc., that are now being unearthed, admitted to reluctantly and all. It makes no difference, though, because the agenda must continue. Because what you're living through today is the culmination of a plan that was set up years and years ago, so that those who already ruled the world, this is their revolution, this is the next part of their revolution, to bring it into the more controlled technocratic system, the efficient system that will suit their agenda for themselves at the top. That's what it's for. You realize, getting back to the matrix, where you're a battery, your energy is what it all runs on, is your energy. You're a slave, you see, for your energy. It's not far-fetched from where we are now, because the elite have decided that they're going to bring in the new system. You're not going to get asked if you like it or not. It's already here. They used 9/11 to take away all your rights, not just in the US, but across the planet. That's what there was a big warning that went off then. You know, alarms went off with 9/11. It wasn't just the fact that towers inside the US came down. A whole different story, regardless of what caused it or whatever. But the fact is, that's what happened. You saw, right? They're gone with folk in it. But why would the whole world go under a new type of anti-terrorism? The whole planet, pretty well. And immediately, all the predictions of the military-industrial complex from the 80s and 90s, I've got old articles from way back, I mean, in real copy, hard copy, right? Where they said, what will we do in a world of peace, you know? The military-industrial complex, currently, you know? Well, surveillance of the citizenry will be the whole new thing, security and surveillance and anti-terrorism. They knew about this a long, long time ago. And that's where it would go. Well, how would you change a society where you're not under constant monitoring by the elite that own you, as far as you're concerned? Well, you need something to happen, right? And of course, the PNAC group, the Project for New American Century, drew up a whole list of countries that wanted to take out enemy, because they had a different agenda from average Americans. But they also wanted to introduce an anti-terrorism idea. They would start selling total security measures and surveillance on all citizenry in the US and outside the US as well. And Britain was in on the act too, naturally, you know, London. I hate saying Britain, because the British folk are as defenseless as the rest of us. You know. The terms, remember, today are real corporate names. That's what these places, they're corporation names. And London has controlled what became Britain and the UK for an awful long time. It still does. But yeah, this is total surveillance of every citizen. And with COVID, oh my good, we'll go the next level now. All the talk and all the preparations to bring in the smart cities by the World Economic Forum, right? The WEF and the World Trade Organization, all these organizations, it's already one club. It's one club, actually. And most of the members of one belong to the other as well. This is how it works, you see. Circles within circles, as Quigley talked about. Carl Quigley it was. And that's where you have interconnecting circles. Just like the symbol, by the way, of the Olympics. That's what you're seeing there. See how they connect? And that's a symbol, the five, of course, it's always the five points and so on, that interconnect that way. And that's how you do it. You need five of them for different parts of controlling society. That's what it stands for. And so they direct the future. They train the public to be terrified through terrorism, anti-terrorism. And now it's terrorism part two with COVID, you see. And then the smart cities are going to be up and running very shortly. We didn't get to vote on any of that either, by the way. It was all set up again with the same characters with Facebook and participating, and Google, the massive Google intelligence network, setting up a good part of it too, and Alphabet agencies, etc. To bring in this wonderful system of total surveillance. From birth to death, 24 hours a day on every individual outside your home or inside your home. That's what's in the smart hubs and all the rest of it. And again, lockdowns. And if you're a bad boy or girl, you see, and you've been naughty, and you haven't taken your latest vaccination, which is a whole list of stuff they want to give you now. I'll touch on that later. And I touched on this back in the 90s. Again, to me, everything's like repetition. But yeah, they'll simply lock you down at home. They don't have to give you an excuse. Well, but it's been reported that you've been in the vicinity of a person who had a sniffle. You know? And it's just like getting banned off the different social media. They don't have to give you any reason for it, you see. You're under these are totalitarian tyrannies. They make themselves, they make their institutions that belong to the elite, you see, they make them necessary to survive in today's economy, as an example. And everything, like I said, to talk years before I had a computer, I still was giving talks, see, on other folks' shows and so on. And I said, everything on the computer will be free, on your internet will be free for a long time, and to get you in on it, and there's lots of pornography, they kept telling you that in the newspapers to make sure everybody just dived into it. And folk did, you know. And I says, I'll be free, and the YouTubes will be free, and everything's free, and then they start taking it all away from you. And once you're familiar with using it all, you'll go along with it anyway, and you might even pay to continue, because now it's part of your... You adapt very quickly into systems. They know this. And people literally... it's like political parties. If Dad and Grandpa was in the Labour Party in Britain, then often you'll be the same. Even if you're not in the working class anymore, that's how it works. Folk don't change so quickly unless it's done through terror and fear. You see, then they'll change very quickly indeed. They have to, because everything's been let loose with the terror, you know, if you understand what I'm talking about. So you better get changed. That's how things really work. And most folk go along with it works on most folk very quickly. And getting back to the folk running into mass pits to be executed, you can actually see the old footage on this if you want to see it. Remember what Plato said, don't ever think that somehow you're an advanced civilization. Don't ever think that. We're all the same people as we were thousands of years ago, regardless of the technology. We're the same people. We behave the same way to similar circumstances. Because really, there are not many ways you can react to things as a human. It's either happily, contentedly, quietly, but maybe with a bit of unpleasantness, or maybe with even anger. But it's always simple things you react with, you see, very predictable. And again, most folk will take the path of least resistance, especially now when you have experts convincing you through we used to call it pattern merchants in Britain, a good pattern merchant, someone who could prattle off with a good spiel and convince you, a good salesman, the pattern merchants. They go this way anyway, you see, and especially if they've got a title now, this person is an expert in blah, 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 whatever it happened to be, and folk are trained that way, like Bertrand Russell said. I can't remember, it was the impact of science on society. But he did mention, I actually read it on the air, some of these books years ago. But he mentioned it, yeah. He said the people can be guided into anything. And the children especially, if you get them young, you can nearly use them, you know. I've watched a lot of the symbols for old occultic symbols being adapted and adopted for political purpose right up to the present time, by the way. It's interesting. Even the Extinction Rebellion, folk don't even know where the symbol comes from. But it's right in front of their faces if they want to look at it. But yeah, folk will do what they're told because you've got a global threat, you see. You've got an invisible enemy. It's right off a science fiction movie. And especially all the sci-fis that you've seen for years, you know, the plague, the coming plague and virus and lockdowns, all these things they give you as horror movies. And here all is, eh? You're all prepared for it. You've seen it in the movies. You've seen Dustin Hoffman dash about, you know, like a madman trying to save you all in the movie. Eh? I can't remember the name of that one, but that was one of the big ones years ago. And here we are, and it's all been managed and worked out. When even, again, the Rockefeller Foundation came out with their big plans in 2010 and put it in there, the lockstep part of their plan, it was only part of it. But and of course, how technology in the future would influence us all and control us. Well, it's all here, folks. This is it, you know. It's all here. The people who brought the whole world to a standstill did it deliberately. Partly, they claim, I don't really believe it all, but this part, anyway, they claim that it's another reset, as I say, like the World Economic Forum, this is a reset, you know, the global reset, like the last 2007-2008 crash was a reset. This is the big one now for the whole planet, but not just for money, it's to be a whole new resetting of life existence, right down to the said in their own writings. Because of an intelligence department in the WEF, you can actually see on their website. And when you go in there, you'll see it redefining what a human is right in there too, you see. Now, you thought you were in the sci-fis. These are the guys who create it for real life, real science fiction. And believe you me, there's nothing they can't make happen if you go along with it. By the other token, there's nothing they can get away with if you don't go along with it. I hope you understand that part. Do you really want to go into a brave new world where I mean, the West has already said, and Russell said it too, Bertrand Russell, that the sterilization technique was already working in the West way back in the 50s. And the biggest problem in the West now is, infertility. I used to give the talks on the sperm count plummeting in the Western male. And what got me onto it was, why the interest in universities? Certain universities were given, and it's mainly women, by the way, that were given these tests, to test young men's sperm counts in certain universities. But this, again, we're farmed. They've such. It's the same as our animal husbandry. You've got to know everything about the animals that you own. Any changes have to be completely noted. Well, that's us, folks. We're all humans. And they would go through all these different reasons for the sperm plummeting, until literally, I think they had less than about a quarter of the mobile and motile functioning sperm, spermatozoa. Than males had back in the 1950s, is that? Plummeted. And we're not supposed to be worried about that, you see, because they don't tell you why. The reason why they don't say why it's getting caught, because they know what's causing it. It's intentional. You're starting to get the picture. If it wasn't intentional, they would be spending billions of bucks to find out what happened to their animals. So they know what happened to their animals, us, you see. Of course they do. That's the horror show you're living in. It's been going on your whole life long, and you don't know it. And it's so true with the cancers that came out after the polio vaccine, with the Salk vaccine, Simeon 40 virus. It was included in it. Because they grew the cultures for the vaccines on kidney cells of monkeys. and they couldn't extract the cell, the viruses that were growing purposely on them and getting mixed with the viruses of the monkeys, eh? So, and they put them in pretty well blenders at the end of it. If you hadn't figured that out, I mean, this is real high science, eh? And that's how they end up with your different vaccines, eh? But in amongst the vaccines, and they admit that, and, oh yeah, millions of folk got the same N40 virus. And that was just one of many viruses. There's over 110 viruses that they've named so far. It was pumped into humans. And the same N40 is a carcinogen because it's cancer. That was science, eh? Science did that. Science that seemed, oh, we're here to help you, eh? Same science, we're here to help you. It's sad, isn't it? They were so trusting. And why shouldn't we be so trusting? You see, we normally have instincts that warn us about someone who wants to harm us. But once again, you've been trained and raised by, white-coated professionals. Mainly on TV and things like that, telling you how, and again, magazines, to push their objectives. It doesn't mean that doctors are bad, but doctors really are trying to do their best most of the time. They're letting them get hoodwinked as well. Other ones know darn well what's happening with the vaccinations, as an example. They know. Sure they do. And that's a whole field in itself, but a lot of doctors really are under their own tyranny of being licensed by big authorities that then can withdraw their licenses if they don't go along with things. It's already happened under the COVID, you know. Folk who won't go along with it. So, yeah, you live under tyrannies.